extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, David Goss, Stefano Fusaro. Two words, decision day. It is here. All the time, all the effort, all the energy, all the hours on MLS Season Pass we have spent comes down to this. 90 minutes.
Orlando against TFC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we live for.
Michael Bradley is what we're starting today's show with. No, we will give love to one of the goats of American soccer.
Shout out to a legend.
Yeah, this is what it comes down to. The regular season has one day left. All the Eastern Conference games at 6 p.m. Eastern. All the Western Conference games at 9 p.m. Eastern. Of course, you'll have MLS 360 throughout on MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. There is a 90-minute pregame show. A full match of pregame, 4:30 p.m. Eastern on MLS Season Pass. And then wrap up afterward to give you all the highlights, all the goals from Decision Day, all the, I don't know, the scenarios. We don't know what's going to happen. We'll do our best to sort through them right now. Then playoff look ahead because it will be set.
Are there hydration breaks in that full 90 minute or is it just halftime?
Well, apparently there's a lot of different people on the show.
Cool.
And there's only not enough mics. There's so many people, there's not enough mics. So inevitably you do get a hydration break when you have to give your mic away. So I'm just trying to, you know, I'm just trying to get as many minutes as I can, play a big role. Matt Doyle will be there with us.
You're just trying to sharpen things up for the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm already in. I'm there.
Yeah.
I'm already in. Nothing to worry about.
Over under hydration breaks for Wiebe.
I'm not as good of a hydrator as I should be. I'm going to be honest with that. Yeah. I spent most of my time in Portugal with Mindy yelling at me, drink water.
You guys are the reverse. There's like a big cliche in social media of like people saying like, I feel sick and their partner being like, have you drank water today? And I'm that person in my relationship. Oh, you feel sick? Okay, cool. Have you drank water today?
Rebecca drinks water like twice a week at most. Absurd.
Yeah, I'm not a great hydrator, but I'm trying.
You were hydrating with beer.
Yeah, no.
Plenty of hydrating.
Vino Verde is like
you
not
looked
that
very hydrated.
The Vino Verde was hydrating. I can tell you that right now. All right, let's jump into it. Best decision day memory. Let's go to the past before we go to the future. What is it for you, Doyle? Take us back.
10 years ago, the Red Bulls, Thierry Henry. I think he played his best game in MLS. The Red Bulls entered that decision day needing a win over the Chicago Fire. That was the magical Mike McGee season. They needed the win to edge out Portland in decision day. And the curse of Curricula was still a real thing at that point. For those who don't know, 1996, the first ever Red Bulls game. Defender Nikola Curricula scored an own goal at the death. Sort of set the standard for that team. They had never won a trophy. They go down 1-0, of course, at home to Mike McGee and the Chicago Fire. Everybody in the stands at that stadium said, oh, it's happening to us again. We're going to fall short of a trophy again. They were the only original team at that point that had never won a trophy. Thierry Henry answers with a banger 10 minutes later, and then he proceeds to absolutely dominate that game. He only ended up with a goal and assist, but he was the best player on the field by a mile.
They won like 5-2, right?
They won 5-2.
Yeah.
They won 5-2, and he turned that game on its head. And that was the first time I can ever remember seeing like real wild celebrations in the stands for the Supporters Shield. It meant a lot to that crowd. As a full sold out stadium. We all know that stadium's amazing when they have a good crowd. Haven't seen a lot of that this year. And that, like, it was a big moment for me. First of all, because I had so many friends who were still in the stands. You know, I grew up as a, you know, Metro Stars supporter. So seeing them all get to be happy, I had not ever seen the team do that for them before. So I was happy for them. But also because Henri understood what the moment was. And this was one of the greatest players in the world still at that point, in my opinion, putting the team on his back, leading them to a trophy. And that was the moment, I wish Kalen Carr was here, that was the moment that really canonized the Supporters Shield as something that teams absolutely fight for.
Kalen, I'm pretty sure I was in the...
I was in the stands.
Yeah, we might have been there.
I think we were there together.
Yeah.
Because I remember us watching after they won.
How was Charlie doing? Were you friends with Charlie Fiction at that point?
Charlie Fiction is not a fake Red Bull.
No, yeah. I don't remember. I can't remember that much, but what I do remember is Henri like choreographing all of the photos on the field after of like who had to be in around the trophy. Yeah. It meant like a lot to him. And he did it for like, it was like 15, 20 minutes.
100%. I remember Pecky being super jacked up about it. You don't forget the times where you see a trophy handed out. Like those are the things throughout my time at MLS, just being on a field when somebody wins something is just one of those core memories. It just kind of gets burned into you with all the confetti and everything falling down. But I thought for a second, I was like, was that a fever dream for me? But I was pretty sure I was there with you. So I'm glad to hear you confirm.
Yeah.
That I can memory.
Confirm your existence.
Yeah, I was. Yeah. Thanks to Dave, I now know I was there. Yeah, I've been there for other ones at Red Bull Arena as well. I remember the Armis one, and they didn't have the actual shield that day. They just
18,
had the they had the like the Captain America that were passing around. I mean, there's no supporter shield to hand
Weedy
out.
He loves nothing more than having to use a fake thing as supporter shield. When Philly won it, and they had the Captain America thing, and you spent 4 weeks covering that.
Yeah, well, see, that's just, you know, you go viral on one tweet and it just goes to your head, man. You're locked in on that story once that happens. All right, Dave, decision day memory.
Mine's more negative than yours. I guess not for RSL fans, but mine is 2018 with Zlatan on the LA Galaxy going into the final game of the season.
Did not show up.
So the LA Galaxy had to beat a Houston team that had already been eliminated at home to pass RSL and clinch their spot in the playoffs. They were up 2-0 at halftime. Houston's already eliminated. Houston was 1-10-5 on the road that season. Houston came back and won 3-2. RSL's on a bye. Has no ability to affect the standings anymore. Sitting at home. I think we had spent 2 weeks being like, yeah, and RSL's eliminated, and they don't play, so we don't talk about
nobody's going to want to see the Galaxy. And they're, sure, they give up goals, but they got Zlatan. Yeah. They're going to kill teams in the playoffs.
And I don't know if it was Albert Elise.
I don't remember,
but it all fell apart. And that was like I think for me, one of the big decision days where everything was happening at the same time, where sometimes there's these big moments and it's great on the last night. But in terms of like, everything's going on at the same time. You're flipping. You're trying to follow the scores. We're all yelling at each other. That was like one of the big ones I remember. And obviously, Zlatan missing out was going to have to then talk about it. And I think Chris Wondolowski had made a quote earlier that year about how he was excited for Zlatan to help the Galaxy finish seventh in the West. And then they finished, I think they finished seventh with that result.
I do remember all the YouTube like watch alongs that we've done over the years where we all just were sort of remote watching together, including during the pandemic. And those were just so fun. So fun to be around each other and to experience the moments at the same time, to watch the standings, to be like, are they changing? Is this happening? Did that goal just actually happen? And scream. I mean, that's what Decision Day is all about, is experiencing it together. But if you're the Galaxy, sometimes it's painful. So I'm going to throw it back to 2021 for the Galaxy.
Yikes, this is a rough one.
3-3 with Minnesota, and they needed a draw or a win. A win would do it, but with help, a draw would do it. So Galaxy are tied 3-3 with Minnesota, and I think it was again at home. And I remember thinking, why aren't they really going for this? Like, go for the win. But of course, if you go for the win, you open yourself up for the loss. And then Kansas City, RSL, it was the game where Justin Glad pretty clearly handled the ball on Roger Espinoza in the box. It didn't get called. That would have gone the Galaxy's way. It didn't. And then Demir Krylak scored. And then the Galaxy look at the scoreboard and they're like, oh my God. Yeah. 2 seconds ago, we were in. Now we're out. We have to get a goal. They couldn't get a goal. And afterwards, was that the game where Chicharito, did he cry on the field?
I think so.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I think he cried on the field. And afterwards, I mean, it was just, the Galaxy are just apoplectic because they go from we're in and we're going to have every opportunity to make a run here to we're out. And how the hell did that happen? And that's Decision Day in a nutshell. Steph.
I love a good underdog. And if you're a new MLS fan, you would think that the Colorado Rapids are a perpetual underdog. But just 2 years ago, they win the West on the last day of the season. They need a win to do that. LAFC need a win to get into the playoffs. They go down early, Colorado does. And then the Rapids come back and absolutely crush LAFC, eliminate them from playoff contention. Jonathan Lewis had 2 goals. Bassett, Baji had goals. I remember I was working for the
Colin
Red Bulls.
Colin Warner, can we just get
Colin Warner?
This doesn't feel like a real, this feels like a fake timeline.
Yeah.
It does not feel real.
It doesn't. I remember I was working for the Red Bulls in 2021, and I remember watching this game with a couple of Red Bulls players who had friends on this Colorado team, and it was just like they were celebrating along with them. So it was just a cool vibe to see that. And look, it was better days at that time for the Colorado Rapids. Clearly, one of the more shocking winners of the Western Conference in a long time until this year at St. Louis, which is a little more shocking even. But yeah, that was, I remember that. That game in specific, it was fun to see a team like that make the
2 years. This all just got me hyped. 2 years. I'm hyped now for Saturday.
You hyped for Colorado versus RSL?
Pretty much. Right?
Rocky Mountain Cup,
they just
baby.
Sold me on Colorado.
Hey, Rapids are trying to avoid losing four times in one calendar year to their rival here.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh, boy.
No, big but like stakes. The moment that always happens where it's like, here's the three potential scenarios, and then there's like four and five, which we're like, won't happen. And then there's always like, in the 37th minute of the first half of the first games, like one team scores all of a sudden and you're like, oh, all of these are back in play.
Yeah.
And then that's,
you just gave a little hope to NYCFC right there. That's because that's what it would take for NYCFC.
They have very little hope. All right. What's at stake on decision day on Saturday?
You mean
playoff berths? Yeah. There's a box down here from San Jose. I dropped it. We'll get it. It was a mea culpa on that one. Two spots up for grabs in the Eastern Conference, three spots up for grabs in the West. Yeah, thank you. No, thank you to you, Dave. I appreciate you. Thanks
You're
for
welcome,
picking that
baby.
Up for me. Home field advantage in both conferences. It's still an absolute mess. In the Western Conference in particular, there are a number of teams that could finish second or sixth. That's how big the spread is. CONCACAF Champions Cup is also at stake. There's one spot open, maybe a second. Depends on who wins MLS Cup, but we'll figure out how that will go.
Orlando have already clinched.
By finishing second? Yeah, because nobody can pass them, so they're in.
And same with St. Louis.
St. Louis are
in. Right.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So we have one more spot, and I believe that can go to Columbus, New England, or LAFC. I know Seattle fans are like, hey, we could get it, but it depends on MLS Cup. Yeah, I know you're saying wrap it up,
I'm just saying of all the things we're going to talk about, we don't need to do
that's
that.
That's fine. Okay, so let's get into the Golden Boot draft update. Clearly, that's very important. You'll care about that one, so we'll update you on that. And then we promised our best 11s, and we put together four in the pre-show meeting, and it took some significant restraint for us to stop at four. So we have four and some snubs, of course. But let's start with the Eastern Conference. Matches starting at 6 p.m. Eastern on MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. Again, a 90-minute pregame show that will lead you in. Existentially, Montreal, New York Red Bulls, Chicago, Charlotte, and NYCFC are hanging in the balance, are looking over the cliff. Charlotte hosts Miami. New York City hosts Chicago. Nashville hosts the Red Bulls. And Columbus host Montreal. Tough one for Montreal. But let's start with what got us here midweek. Charlotte draw in Miami, Doyle. Have two leads, blow two leads, now have dropped 25 points from winning positions. It's the most in Major League Soccer. And the manager, Christian Latanzio, afterwards took offense to what I would call a pretty benign question asking what he attributes the issues with holding leads to. Got pretty frustrated. Maybe a little flustered, started going off about how people should focus on the positive. And that's flabbergasting to me, given that they are below the playoff line. And the entire reason they are is because they've dropped 25 points from winning positions.
It's quite honestly flabbergasting.
Yeah. I am flabbergasted.
Clearly.
What happened in this match, and what do you make of this quote?
I think the quote, he's talking to the players. This seems to me a good example of a coach trying to communicate to his locker room via the media. Because a game like this, where they had two separate leads and they coughed it up again, I think it could get a team down heading into what is a do or die final game of the season. In a vacuum, a point down the road is good. Even though it was very frustrating, I think, the way it came, and it leaves them going into the final game needing a win and some help. They had a chance to come out of this in complete control of their own destiny. They are not. They're a young team. I don't think any of us expected them to win on the road at Miami. Miami was a significantly better team, especially in the second half.
Did we not expect them to win when Inter Miami is missing 11 players, including the best player on the planet?
And has nothing to play for out of the playoffs?
Did you really expect Charlotte to, like, you guys have watched Charlotte all year long.
You're right. I'll withdraw that, but I will say one team looked more likely to win at the end. One team looked more engaged with trying to win at the end, and it wasn't the team
I think that's a little bit of a misnomer because Miami had nothing to lose. Like, yeah, of course they look like they were going to try and win. What else were they doing?
Okay.
You're throwing numbers forward. Robbie Robinson coming off the bench.
If you look at this, the way it lines up, now Charlotte are at home. Chicago's on the road. Red Bulls are on the road. Montreal are on the road. If, honestly, if Charlotte take care of business at home, and I don't think they will, I do not expect them to win.
Yeah, no.
But if they...
That was
if
building up to something else, I thought.
Right? If they take care of business at home, then they're probably going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And I think if you gave Charlotte that up, like if you set up the scenario at the start of the year and said, decision day, if you win at home, you're in the playoffs.
Against an eliminated team.
Against an eliminated team. I think they probably would have taken
with
that.
Lionel Messi.
Now, if you had told them Lionel Messi's coming back and he says he's going to play, might not have been as psyched. But as for what happened, Charlotte's been a mess all year long. Look, we haven't mentioned it a lot since it happened, but Anton Walks, his passing was a tragedy in the human sense, and that comes first. But also, he was a big part of that locker room. He was a huge part of that back line. The stuff that they did last year down the stretch, he was a huge part of that. He was a really good player, man. And they have not been able to fill that void all year long. And no one has suffered more than his center back partner from last year, Adelson Milanda, the very talented young French center back. And he's lost out there, both on and off the ball. It's been tough. Like, I can't imagine having to battle through something like that. So that's one. And then two is Christian Lattanzio got, I think, way too cute all year long in terms of how this team would play. A 4-3-3 single pivot with the left back pinching in to create a 3-2-5-2. And now sometimes it's Andrew Privet stepping off the back line in the John Stones role. And so every time they turn the ball over, everybody's scattered to the four corners, man. Like, there's nobody getting instant pressure to the ball in midfield. And so if you give a team like Miami, which even missing 11 players has a ton of talent out, like Sergio Busquets, Diego Gomez, who Gregory started in central midfield on this one, they had Farias on one wing and Stefanelli on the other, Leo Campa, I just named like five full internationals out there. And oh, by the way, DeAndre Yedlin on one side, Kamal Miller, like Miami's still a more talented team. If you give a more talented team chances to break, chances to attack your young and still kind of lost center backs in transition, you're going to give up goals. That has been the story all season long. I expect it to be the story again on Saturday, except it's going to be Lionel Messi taking the center role.
Adding one more thing with Miami, you have to outscore them. Swiderski coming back from Poland didn't start. I think that's a huge factor of like, this is not a super dangerous attack without him. And the reality in the attack for this team has just been they've got 15 wingers that they hoped would be relevant to them. They all have hit for 40 minutes over the course of 2 months scattered throughout the season.
Kerwin Vargas had his 40 in this game.
And that's great. If Swiderski's in, they probably win 3-2 with Vargas playing, like somehow finishing and creating.
If Swiderski's in and they're playing a 4-2-3-1 with him under Capetti, and that has actually been the big if all year long, because Christian Lattanzio, yeah, it's fair, but like Capetti or, you know, Ajiman, like whatever, a true center forward. Like that was what they did down the stretch last year when they were very good. That is when they have been at their best this year. And Christian Lattanzio has resisted going to that very simple, very stable sort of default formation, which I think would have helped them in attack by putting, you know, getting Swiderski on the ball more, but really help them in defense by uncomplicating and uncluttering all of the roles. It's like plug and play.
All right. One quick question before we dive into the scenarios here. We're talking about Messi.
Is Messi
going to play in this game?
I mean, he said it himself right after that Argentina game where he wins 2-0, scores two bangers, drives, pretty much ends some Peruvian careers with a couple of moves in the midfield. He said he's going to play. Does it make any sense? Not really. The team is out. He's going to be playing against Charlotte on the road. It's, you know, I don't really see why he's going to do this other than he wants to play one more soccer game because he loves playing soccer before going.
He loves decision day.
Obviously, that's exactly why
he's trying to play the execution.
It felt like seeing him on the side or in the crowd on Wednesday of like he's at his limit of like I can watch from the crowd. Like he wants to play, I think.
Yeah, of course.
And clearly he has control over the situation.
By the way, did you guys see the kid jumped onto the field in the Peru-Argentina game to try to take a selfie with Messi, and Pedro Gallese, legend, takes the kid's phone and launches it. So like, good. You are absolutely not doing that.
So good. He also gave Emmy a fist pump as he was walking by Emmy Martinez, which I thought was great. By the way, you see Messi gets to the game, is on the sideline. What are we thinking? David Beckham sent the private jet to pick him up in Peru and drive him back, or he had one of his own ready to go?
24-hour turnaround?
Less than 24 hours from kickoff in Peru.
Peru's closer than Argentina?
It is a lot closer. It's like a five-hour flight.
Just
like,
throw some ceviche in.
I mean, he definitely flew a PJ. Like,
we know that. It's just a matter of whether that was on him or that was, Beck saying, I got you.
I feel like either one of them, this is like, rock, paper, scissor, who's PJ taking on this one?
Which documentary is it going to be?
Exactly. Okay. What do we got, Dave? Who's getting in? Montreal in eighth on 41 points. DC in ninth, throw them out. They're already eliminated.
So weird.
So Red Bulls, Chicago, Charlotte, and NYCFC all trying to jump above the line. Three of them on 40. That's the Red Bulls, Fire, and Charlotte. And then NYCFC just down here on 38, just praying for a miracle.
Yeah, so Montreal plays at Columbus, which I think might be the toughest match of all of this.
Feels like an L. They've won two games all year on the road.
Red Bulls play at Nashville, which Nashville has some stuff to play for in the standings of trying to get up a little higher, but they have nothing to lose. They can't drop.
I know you hate us talking about CONCACAF Champions Cup, but Columbus have something to play for as
well. There you go. Columbus have something to play for as well. And then obviously Chicago at NYCFC. I disagree with you. I've got belief and hope in Montreal that they go on the road, they get a result. So they get a draw, they move to 42 points.
What makes you believe in that scenario when the last match between these two teams was in Montreal and Columbus shellacked them 4-2?
You learn from your mistakes. What makes you believe that the Red Bulls are going to go to Nashville
Nothing.
And score goals?
I don't believe that
What
at
makes
all.
You believe that Chicago or NYCFC are going to find any difference
between what
they do? So I have Montreal going and getting a draw, and Charlotte getting a home victory and making it as the 9 seed.
So Charlotte would jump to 43. Montreal would be at 42.
Red
Bulls,
other way around.
So the Red Bulls losing?
Yeah.
Drawing? Doesn't matter.
I have Red Bull on draw and Chicago and NYCFC on draw.
Yeah, so then it'd be 41 points for them. And yeah, we'd have Montreal and Charlotte in with Charlotte hosting a playoff game.
And Doyle talked about his longtime friends who have watched Metro Stars and Red Bulls. I've seen too many. The Red Bulls just need to score a goal games late in this time of year, and too many, and you have two.
But this time of year, they score the goal. They always get into the playoffs.
They get
that's the thing.
In,
13 straight. That's a major American sport current record. The
100%.
Best streak in the U.S.
But this team does not feel like, can they get through the Eastern Conference Final? This is their Eastern Conference Final.
Back-to-back wins for the first time this year. Just trying to be convincing here. Five goals scored in those games. Even Luquinhas is scoring.
Those were all against Nashville's defense, right?
That's the issue, right?
Nashville's playing the best defense.
Is really like this feels like 1-1 off of set pieces.
100%.
Does 1-1 do it?
I don't think so.
No.
Yeah.
Because you have that much faith in Kamil Joswiak against Lionel Messi.
Swiderski season, maybe.
Oh boy. What game is liable to be the most chaotic? Do we think? What's the game that
it's
you just
gotta be Chicago NYCFC, yes, right? Because NYCFC needs to win. They need goals. They need to open up. Chicago is, I don't know, Shaqiri's gonna score a bunch of goals when everyone's in the stadium and it's full and then disappear 80% of the time. That game
feels like it will be a mess. Any qualifying.
Well, he did it against Miami though, right?
Yeah.
They filled the stadium, Soldier Field, huge crowd. He had two goals. Who are you?
This one will be at Citi Field, right? Yeah. Home of the Mets, your beloved New York Mets.
Yeah, baby.
Is that...
This is Benny Agbayani season.
Is it good vibes for NYC? Because NYCFC need to win this game.
Danny Murphy vibes or it's...
Benny Agbayani.
So NYCFC need to win this game and have the Red Bulls and Charlotte both lose. Because if
if NYCFC end up on 41 points, they cannot pass Montreal because Montreal has the tiebreaker, which is wins, and they cannot pass either New York or Charlotte if those teams just draw. Because again, the tiebreaker is wins. NYCFC have only 8 all year. Like, even with a win, they end up needing all the help possible. I think that is going to make it chaotic because I think there's, like, you just have to go out there and throw caution to the wind.
For a team that doesn't really score goals.
The flip side, they don't allow goals. Yes. They, I think, 4 shutouts in their last 7.
To the wind.
Of all these teams, they have played the best ball recently, but the front office hung that team out to dry all year long by refusing to sign a center forward. It's bizarre.
I agree with you in that I think FC Cincinnati is rooting against NYCFC.
Yeah.
I think if you're Cincinnati, they're the last team you want to see of this group get in.
Here's something to chew on. Of course, tiebreakers are going to be very important. So just to keep you updated, it's wins and then it's goal differential. So keep that in mind as you go through.
You
wins, goal differential,
Fire,
then
goal
goals
win.
Scored. Here is the goal differential for these teams we're talking about. Montreal, minus 15. Red Bulls, minus 4. Chicago, minus 11. Charlotte, minus 8. NYCFC, minus 5.
For the most part, though, that doesn't matter because Montreal has 12 wins.
Right? Yeah. No, I'm just saying.
NYC only has 8.
It's a collection of real contenders.
Oh, yeah. This is the big time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Anybody disagree? Anybody have the scenarios going a different way? Charlotte and Montreal in.
Different. I do have Montreal in.
What's the result that they get in?
So they're going to lose and still get in.
Oh, wow. Zero confidence.
Yeah, they're going to lose this game against Columbus.
I don't
Columbus
think any of
be...
these teams are going to win.
The only one I think does win, I think NYCFC is better than Chicago. I think they win that game.
So up to 41 points.
So they up to 41.
Wins.
Nashville, Red Bull get a draw at Nashville. Yep. I think they get that. That puts them up to 41 as well. Inter Miami beats Charlotte. No confidence in them. Messi's back. He's going to probably have a hat trick, and they win that game. And then that makes it Montreal on 41 points in 8th because they have 12 wins. The Red Bulls in 9th because they have just 10 wins. And that's 8-9. Montreal hosting.
What a
New York
scintillating Red Bulls. Way to make how? 14 straight years in the playoffs.
Come on, Red Bulls.
It would be delicious, though, for the Red Bulls to by tying NYCFC and knocking them out. If NYC Chicago and Minnesota SKC end tied, there's no justice in the world.
Agreed.
Agreed with you. Just want that to be out there.
Yeah, we need something. We need extra. Like,
I
more
mean, Chicago.
Chaos, the better.
Chicago could get in with a tie. I think if you offered Chicago a draw right now, they would take it.
I have zero confidence in that Chicago team.
You shouldn't.
Zero confidence.
It'll be interesting. The one point I want to make, it'll be interesting because NYCFC is going to be all over the ball, right? They'll probably have 60% possession, and Chicago, they're more comfortable in that situation. Like, they're trying to be Nashville, like really deep block, 4-2-3-1 and go.
The other thing with Chicago, I think their biggest weakness defensively, as many as they have, is actually winning 50-50s in the box. And NYCFC, even though they have Picard, they're not really
put the
ball in the box. And so it doesn't really fit NYCFC's game model, but they're also a much better overall team than Chicago. Yeah. And so that's like the question mark in that game.
Okay, let's move on to seeding in the Eastern Conference. As we've
wait,
stated.
What did you? Yeah. Only us two put it
down. What?
I'm flabbergasted that we did not make it.
I cannot believe that the grand tradition of Doyle of voting predictions does not carry on. I've got.
Come on,
I think Charlotte are going to get. I think
go.
Charlotte are going to win.
What?
I do.
Wow.
I
think it's after all
blind confidence.
I have no confidence in that. There's no confidence in these takes. So I'll go Charlotte up to 43. That basically means that New York City are out because now they can't have the tiebreaker.
No, they are out.
Against Montreal. I do not think Montreal will win. So Montreal hold on 41 points. And then I think that inevitably it's just going to be draw season. So New York at best.
So you have Charlotte and Montreal in
Nashville. So I have Charlotte and Montreal.
Wow.
And you have Charlotte hosting.
I do.
Yeah.
And what do you have?
Let me look again. All right. Montreal's going to lose. Red Bulls are going to draw. Chicago's going to lose. Charlotte's going to draw. And NYCFC is going to win. So everybody's going to end up on 41 points than the five.
So you have Montreal and Red Bull in.
I have Montreal and Red Bull in.
Okay. All right, so we're okay.
There it is. Right. It has been stated.
Middle table versus out of
hold us to these takes.
Yeah, for sure.
Betting against all these teams to win, I've never felt more confident.
Yeah, okay. So if everybody loses, well, not everybody can lose.
This is the battle.
NYC and Chicago. Almost there.
After Patrick Schulte's picking Matthew Schwanier's hat trick goal out of the back of the net, you're going to be laughing in all your faces.
Well, let's find out where Schwanier is in our best 11s, Dave. Let's see if you stood up for your boy.
Oh, good call. I forgot about that.
Let's see if you did. We'll just see. Seeding. We talked about the CONCACAF Champions Cup spot. Columbus is currently in pole position for that one. So if they can finish atop basically better than New England and LAFC at this point, they will automatically qualify. And then you will still have a possibility for one more team to qualify depending on who wins MLS Cup. We don't have to get into that. The four games at stake here, New England hosting Philly. So head-to-head there right now, Philly third, New England fifth. Columbus hosting Montreal, of course. Cincinnati hosting Atlanta and Nashville hosting the New York Red Bulls. There's a lot of different iterations here in this. Philadelphia can finish third, fourth, or fifth. Columbus can finish third, fourth, or fifth. New England can finish third, fourth, fifth, or sixth. Atlanta can't actually jump into the home field advantage zone. It's only fifth, sixth, or seventh for them, and it's the same for Nashville. What are we watching closest here? What's the best game? The one that's going to have pure decision day energy?
My feeling is Cincinnati-Atlanta, because Cincinnati is going for 71 points, which would put them tied for third with the Red Bulls of 2018 for the best regular season of all time.
Only three teams have ever topped 70 points.
And they have nothing to lose. So I think they start Bupenza. They go out. They attack. They're open. Atlanta gives up a million goals, but also they've been really fun to watch going forward. So I think overall, I think that game and that experience is going to be really fun. But I would say New England Philly is the most like playoffy preview, probably feels more like a playoff game.
Don't the Revs feel like a dead team walking right now, though?
The Nashville game felt like the Revs had given up on the season, and then Chankale was the best player on the field in the second half, and Heels probably the best player in this game, and that kind of pulled me back a little bit. But the back three with Omar and Romney and
they're just
Kessler was atrocious. Yeah, with I guess it was Ema at left wing back. It was brutal,
and it's not going to get any better.
No. It doesn't feel like it.
No,
yeah.
Where does this end up? Who gets the two home field advantage spots? I mean, that's what really matters here.
Philly, there's no chance Philly falls below New England. They'd have to lose to New England by three goals or more to fall under fourth. So to me, whether it's third or fourth, Philly's locked in.
Philly's a home field team in the first round.
I think Columbus get it done. Columbus, Montreal's a good matchup for them. I think they will take care of business at home. So those two teams get those two spots. Nashville can climb over the Revs, can't they?
Who do you want to avoid in the Revs, Atlanta, Nashville zone?
Nashville.
And I know up until last week, they had won one game in the entire second half of the season. But we've said on this show a bunch of times, we all think the real Nashville is the Nashville that we saw in the League's Cup. And now having 2 weeks off during the international break, you know, being in a position where they're healthier, where Surge has started to score goals, who would want to face this team?
Yeah, 100%.
Whereas, look, Atlanta on paper and on grass or turf is the most talented of these teams, but they give you goals. They let you play. And like not just like you have to really play through them, but like you can walk up the field and they're playing a high line and they don't put any pressure on the ball. So you just run over the top and you can score a goal that easy. Like we saw Lionel Messi do it and everybody's like, oh, look at how Messi is exposing how bad these MLS teams are. Bernard Camungo then did it like literally the next time they play. It's like, you don't have to be the greatest player of all time to score this exact goal against Atlanta United.
By the way, some news around here. Dax McCarty will not play on decision day. He is suspended for Nashville. So
smart. Get that suspension out.
Yeah. Season, meanwhile, at the top,
that's a veteran move.
Cincinnati and Orlando are sitting back watching just to see who they will get in that first round. Cincinnati seeing who finishes in the eighth and ninth spot. And then Orlando looking at the seventh spot thinking, I was thinking they would want New England. But TBD, we'll see. Anything else to add in the Eastern Conference?
Are we talking MB 90 or are we going?
Yeah. Later? Michael Bradley, before we get to the Western Conference, Michael Bradley announced his retirement this week, 36 years old, a 19, 20 year career, the last remaining Metro star, Doyle.
A lot of Metro Stars mentions on this.
Has now hung up his, well, not, he's got one more game, but he will hang up his boots. 287 MLS games for Toronto FC, 151 caps for the U.S. men's national team. That's third all time. Played in two World Cups, scored a boatload of goals against Mexico, massive ones, including at the Azteca. Metro Stars, Aaron Veen, Borussia Mönchengladbach, Aston Villa for a hot second, Kiev Verona, Roma, and then Toronto FC. Just an incredible career all around, a trailblazing career, a guy that was a starter in Major League Soccer as a teenager before that was in vogue, certainly, then went to Europe and made it happen. I still remember desperately searching for a Michael Bradley, Aaron Veen heart jersey for like 3 years.
Getting
updates on Big Soccer at the time and otherwise about the goals he was scoring, and then he was doing interviews in Dutch, and then he moves to Germany. He's doing interviews in German and playing for Mönchengladbach. And then, of course, making a career in Serie A and starting in a place that wasn't sort of a traditional power at all in Verona, because whatever happened with Aston Villa or Arsenal, if you guys remember that, he was supposed to go to Arsenal and Kim Kallstrom, I think. Kim Kallstrom took the spot.
Oh, all right.
I was following his career very closely. He's my favorite USMNT player of all time. He blazed trails, and he did it his own way. And he, at the end of his career in particular, was a really strong voice for important things that are very important. That
social justice issues.
Yeah.
When it came time after the Pulse shooting to show allyship and solidarity, this is in 2016, he wore the rainbow armband in the game.
And not just wore, if I remember correctly, worked with U.S. Soccer over the course of about 24 hours to get
it was his idea to wear rainbow armband. He did it even though at the time in this country, any athlete who took a stance for social justice was immediately in the crosshairs of a certain segment of the population. He did it anyway. He did it in Copa America. This wasn't just a friendly. He wore it with pride. He was a great ally then. He was a great ally 4 years later during Black Lives Matter, speaking thoughtfully and forcefully, and with curiosity and openness. His good friend from that Toronto team for a good long while, Justin Morrow, talked about how supportive Michael Bradley had been for the Black Players for Change movement in MLS. He did everything with his position and his privilege that we ask for from our athletes, from our heroes. He's 10 years younger than me. I look at him as a role model for how he has conducted himself pretty consistently over the course of his career. I wish him all the best. As soon as I tweeted something out, there were a number of people in my mentions saying future national team coach one day. It wouldn't shock any of us, right?
No.
We will see him on the sidelines, I'm sure, whether it's in MLS or in Europe, maybe one day for the national team. First ballot, U.S. Soccer Hall of Famer, period.
Yeah, I echo, obviously, everything you talked about off the field, and you mentioned trailblazing in Europe, but him coming to TFC was also a huge moment in MLS history, and us being
it was
MLS
a bloody
show.
Big deal.
It was a bloody big deal. At the same time, Jermaine Defoe, he left Roma, where he was legitimately playing for a big team. He came to create something new. The USMNT captain going to Toronto as well was always this weird thing. I look at what they created in Toronto as one of the big moments in MLS of club relevance in a major market, and then showing what an MLS club could be at the highest levels. He obviously was a big part of Jozy Altidore coming over, and then them being able to win and continue to push things into CCL and what they did as a soccer player on the field. Like, I think part of your fandom is he was good at everything, and he had worked so hard at his game, and he flexed in and out of a lot of different roles in Toronto. Obviously,
and for the national team,
yeah, and for the national team, 2014, that was a whole train wreck for him, and he persevered through a lot of it. But the TFC teams that he was the backbone of, that he helped create, facilitate, I think a lot of players came there towards the end of their careers just to win because of the culture that he had helped set. We sat down and spoke with him a couple times. It's always an incredible conversation. You're introspective for us because he's sort of pushing you at all times. But I don't think Major League Soccer is what it is without the decisions he made in his career, and then the way he guided it and sort of pushed things and wasn't just like, I'm a player and I'm not part of this. He's always been very hands-on for everything.
Before I give you a chance here, Steph, to just air out whatever you got going, I want to jump in on what you said about Michael Bradley as a player. For me, what really sort of locked me in on Michael Bradley was, one, we're the same age, so it was relatable in a way to look across and be like, oh my God, look what he's able to do, things that we weren't seeing other people do. But I remember with hair Michael Bradley at the U17, I believe it was, or U20 World Cup U20. In Canada. Yeah, yeah.
I drove up team, to Montreal to watch that yeah. first
and
game.
What I remember from the early days is what really locked me in, which was just insane competitiveness and like burning so hot at times, sometimes too hot in certain situations. It cost him. But you could just see a dude that was like, I am so locked into this. And I care so much. And that was something that I couldn't help but look up. I just was like, that is it. That's what I want.
He was suspended for the Confederations Cup final in 2009 because he picked up a red card against Egypt, I want to say.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, that competitiveness. He does not seem like the easiest hang, right? Like, he seems like
yes.
Like a great player, a huge competitor, not the easiest hang.
Yeah, without a doubt. Look, I mean, you guys kind of touched every point. I think that celebrate him not just as a player, but as a human and what he's done for social justice issues in this country at this level as well. I think it's just huge. As a player, you know, obviously the iconic goal of the Azteca is one of the almost awesome moments.
The Slovenia goal
as well is huge. I remember him so clearly when playing at Roma and just like, him being like, wow, like an American
he's
dominating
and
being that good at a club like Roma in Serie A. I remember just being kind of in awe of that. You know what I mean? We really hadn't seen that many players have that type of success at that point yet. It was just, I remember him for that goal in the Azteca, really getting me into this team, really like, oh, wow, okay, this is cool. This guy can do this from that position. So many good things. It's a man to be celebrated, like you said, on the pitch and off the pitch as well.
Now, there are going to be, of course, people that say, hey, you should be mentioning Kuva here as a primary point of his legacy. And we should. And it is a part of it. Yeah. And I give him credit for being one of the ones that truly stood up and talked about it. But it's not just a Michael Bradley thing. It's a Jurgen Klinsmann. It's a Bruce Arena. It's every player in that squad thing, though he was in a leadership position. There are people that will say he shouldn't have come back to Major League Soccer, that he shouldn't have gone to Toronto FC at that point in his career. To those people, I say, nobody cares what you think generally, like, especially the players. Like, he had to make that decision. And yes, he made a boatload of money in doing it. And congratulations to him for doing so. I am in favor of American soccer players like having independent wealth off being great at their craft. Like that's a cool development in this country, and it's not a universal one at all. He chose something different. He chose to make a legacy, and like that's a personal choice. The choice was to go to Toronto, where it was a dumpster fire, objectively so, like the worst club in the league, and turn it into a power. And he did it. And it's kind of sad now that he leaves back at that other end of the spectrum.
Yeah. No, it is.
But the pathway to getting back exists for them, and when he arrived, I don't think anyone thought that it did for Toronto.
Right. Yeah, it took a massive lift to make that club into what it was the back half of the last decade. It doesn't feel like it'll take as much of a lift going forwards, and that's part of what Michael Bradley built. As for Kuva, look, he didn't ask to play 1v3 in central midfield. That was the coach's choice.
Bet you this was coming up.
Yeah. That was the coach's choice to go on the road and play a 4-4-2 wide diamond with only one true central midfielder when all you need is a win, or all you need is a draw. You didn't need to go out and win that game. So there was world historically bad coaching at the start of the hexagonal, and then there was world historically bad coaching at the back end of the hexagonal. And Michael Bradley, he was the one who stood up in the locker room after that game and was willing to talk, and not many other players on the team.
And took the booze along with Josie in particular coming around all these Major League Soccer stadiums afterwards. And, look, fans had a right to boo, and I said it at the time. I still believe that. Absolutely they do. But, you know, that's not easy.
Simon Borg is about to come through that door.
He's like, I will boo you right now. Yeah. Speaking of, that was a little trauma from Doyle there. We had, you know, it was bubbling
get
up.
That out.
John Herdman used the word trauma, excuse me. This week, it's John Herdman's first game, the final game of the 2023
season. Do not talk
about
this. Move on to the next thing. Do not talk about TFC.
He said they're stitching it together.
Do not
talk
about it.
No, the only thing we got to tell TFC is build him a statue. Build him a statue at the Hall of Fame for Michael Bradley. Build him a statue at the Hall of Fame. Build him a statue in Toronto. He deserves it.
It's an interesting legacy because it's not just purely American soccer.
No, you can look at a lot of Canadian men's national team qualifying and a lot of players in the Toronto area.
All right, Wild Wild West time. two different races, just like in the East, one for three playoff spots that five teams could pick up. Those five teams are the Portland Timbers, FC Dallas, San Jose, Earthquakes, Sporting Kansas City, and Minnesota United. And then there's a seeding battle from 2 to 6 that is like shuffle the deck, and you could end up essentially anywhere. I think only LAFC are insured that they will have home field advantage in the first round.
And St. Louis.
Oh, yeah. But they're chilling. They're hanging up. All right, let's start with the folks trying to survive. Final three spots, all kind of hinges on one game, which is kind of awesome, but potentially disastrous if that game doesn't go the way we want. Sporting Kansas City, Minnesota. One of those teams has to win. A draw does absolutely nothing. If this is a draw, then it'll be Portland, Dallas, and San Jose in whatever order they end up in based on their results. So, as neutrals, we need a winner. We need Kansas City or Minnesota to win. We need the pressure to be put on Portland, Dallas, and San Jose. At the very least, we need one of Kansas City or Minnesota to be leading so that the scoreboard watchers on those other benches are like, oh my God, push.
Yeah.
Go get goals. Go make this interesting. Sporting Kansas City, Minnesota, the best game in this bracket here. Who would you rather see in the playoffs, Dave? If you could choose one of those two teams for the results to go a certain way, for one of them to win, for them to get in the playoffs, who would it be?
Whew, that's a good question. I guess I would probably say Minnesota. Sorry, I wouldn't want to see Minnesota of the two.
You don't want Minnesota
as a neutral?
No, if I'm a better
team. No, we're talking about neutral here.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. No,
I thought you were asking if I was a team in the top of the West, would I want to get in?
No.
No, I'd rather, as a neutral, I'd rather watch Kansas City right now. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought this was the Bebelo Reynoso table.
No, right? This is like, Alan. I thought Alan Pulido was all. You guys put him on every team over my guy Zhao Klaus.
Samu Pukki's rolling in saying, "Hold on, now I just scored 4 goals."
Yeah, I'd rather watch Pulido.
Got a
than
new
Pukki.
Coach. Yeah, no, it's a different style.
Yeah,
where's Bongi Hive in all of this?
He's in you've always Brooklyn been a big box jet guy. Towing. It's not my problem. Yeah.
I would rather see Minnesota.
Yeah. I'd rather see Minnesota. But I'm a big Adrian Heath guy, so I'm a little upset at Minnesota. So I did not pick Minnesota to win this game.
Go. Okay.
Just pick with your heart. It always works out.
Yeah, it always works, right?
How does this game play out, Doyle? Because everything hinges on this. So we might as well start there.
Yeah. Kansas City have been a good team after the first 10 games of the season. They're a good team because they keep the ball. They stopped turning the ball over in bad spots, which stopped exposing their center backs, who lack a little bit of pace. So they force you to take risks in certain parts of the field, and then they're still not a high-pressing team anymore, but they do, once they win the ball, they start knocking it around and can pull you apart and make you defend across the width of the pitch and not just in the central zone. If Kansas City can do that, with Pulido dropping in and becoming a playmaker and those wingers crashing the box from various angles, I mean, I think they'll carry play. I think they'll put Minnesota under a lot of pressure. And even last week, or 2 weeks ago, Minnesota was winning 5-2. They still gave up 2 goals, man.
Yeah. The flip side, Kansas City won 3-2, up a man, and
right,
they still gave up.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Like,
that's why this game could be so fun.
Yeah, it feels like it's going to be a high scoring game, because even if Sporting KC don't turn the ball over in bad spots, Reynoso's so good, he could carve you open anyway. Like, we're looking at these five teams that we're talking about, Minnesota, KC, San Jose, Dallas, and Portland, all have pluses, all have minuses. Only one team has a guy that I think could go into the playoffs and be the best player in the entire league for a month. And that's Minnesota United with Emmanuel Reynoso. And now with Pukki and Bongi and, you know, a few of the other attackers as well. Like,
Hassani Dotson.
Hassani Dotson. They don't have to take such wild risks with their fullbacks pushing them upfield in order to create something. So this could end up being 3-2 or 4-3. Like, this could end up being the game of the day. And it could also end up not mattering because Portland's at home versus Houston, and Houston's a better team, but Portland's been great lately, and Houston's not great on the road. Dallas is at the Galaxy, and Dallas have not won much, but the Galaxy will give you 5 goals. Like, without even thinking about it. And San Jose are home against Austin. And San Jose, like Dallas, they have been kind of ponderous in attack, but they're playing an Austin team that gives you goals. So if those three teams take care of business in games they honestly should win, it doesn't actually matter what either Minnesota or Kansas City do.
The most fitting ending for Kansas City and Minnesota would be a high-scoring draw.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where they are threatening the goal, banging the crossbar, doing everything they can, and just can't quite get it over the line. It would be indicative of their entire seasons. Kansas City starting off the way they did without a win in 10 games. Minnesota sort of collapsing at home in particular, and then having the manager fired. It would just sort of be fitting. Portland-Houston seems like a sneaky one, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, I think Portland have been one of the most fun teams to watch basically since Gio Savarese has left. There's flow to the attack.
Interestingly, the reason he left was Houston laid the smackdown.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, in this specific matchup, Houston wants to dominate the ball, and otherwise they get exposed. Portland doesn't really need the ball. They're super lethal. They're lethal on the break.
Yeah.
Unusually extremely lethal.
What's the qualifier that Doyle hates? Uniquely lethal.
No, you could use unique as a qualifier. You can't qualify the world unique.
The world?
The word unique.
Got it.
Nailed him!
Look at that. Well done.
What a buffoon.
Dummy.
So I actually think this sets up comfortably for Portland in the way they can play this game. There's going to be energy in the building. I think this is a team that has sort of rallied around themselves as a group of being like, we are better than that SmackDown, than being out of the playoffs. And I look at a team that can take advantage of the holes that Houston leaves. So I feel fairly confident that Portland's in. I think this whole thing comes down to Dallas. Like, if Dallas can wake up and play with any sort of intent and look like they care and it matters, I think the playoff spots are sealed. If not, I think it's open for SKC and Minnesota to jump them.
So I'll preface this by saying I would rather watch Minnesota in the playoffs. I would rather watch Reynoso because I want to just see him play all the time because he's that good. But I'm going to pick SKC to win that game against Minnesota at home. I just trust Peter Ramiz a little bit more. And I do think that Pulido will show out in that game.
So Kansas City are up to 44 points.
Yes.
That would put them above Portland, Dallas, and San Jose.
Yes.
What are the scenarios for them, though?
So Dallas, don't trust them at all. Dallas draws with the Galaxy. The Galaxy end the season with a draw at home to FC Dallas to knock them
44
out.
44 points, but 10 wins. Kansas City has 11, would have 12 with the win. Yeah. So Kansas City would be above Dallas despite both being on 44.
Yes. San Jose beats Austin.
Okay, they're in 46
points. Yep. And then the Timbers draw with Houston at home.
44 points.
So then I got it here. San Jose 7th with 46 points. SKC 8th, 44 points, 11 wins, -5. Did I get this wrong? Yeah, I did, I guess.
They would have negative.
They would have 12
wins. Depends on the.
They would have 12 wins.
They would have 12 wins.
And a -4
you're good.
Or better.
No, you're good. Yes.
Okay, and then Timbers 9th, 44 points with 11 wins.
Yeah, it is. It can get hairy for the Timbers really fast.
It can.
Against the good Houston team.
And that's the thing where I do agree that we know the atmosphere at Providence Park is going to be absolutely wild. But I still trust that midfield to be able to hold and to be able to control the game, even at a wild Providence Park, to get at least a draw against that Portland side.
How much do we trust San Jose?
I don't trust any of these teams.
I mean,
It's the same thing.
I'll trust them just a little bit more than I trust FC Dallas. That's why I'm saying that they do get, they can get a result against Austin, whereas Dallas hasn't shown. I mean, they've been uninspiring. It's not just that they're not playing well. They just don't do anything.
Home game against Colorado.
And they can't get it done, where they had a chance to lock it up.
Yeah.
And they can't get it done against Colorado at home. Why should I believe that they could even do it against
the
Galaxy?
They're like the perennial 0.75 XG team.
Yeah.
Yep. That's a great way to put it.
It's just like, oh, yeah, we're going to get through 90 minutes, and you might create one good chance, two half chances. That's it.
Yep.
There's nothing else.
And that was a story at home against Colorado. Now, I do think Colorado is a better defensive team than the Galaxy are. I could see if Dallas play with urgency, and like we talked about this on the preview, we want them to start Bernie Kamungo. I think Kamungo is just a better player than their other options on the wings. I think he's more goal dangerous. And if you're playing Velasco as a 10 and Jesus Ferreira as a number 9, then you need at least one of your wingers to always be going towards goal. And I think these are all the ifs that we've said about Dallas basically the entire back half of the season. But you have to do it now, man. Like, you have to come out with complete urgency.
But they haven't. They should have been coming out with urgency for the last 3-4 match days where they've had opportunities to do it. And it's uninspiring, man. Like, it's not the type of soccer that you say, okay, this team can go out and just like force themselves to a win, just like because of how much effort and urgency they're putting forward. I haven't seen it.
The interesting part for Dallas and San Jose are both teams that like to be a little bit, you said ponderous, Doyle, but yeah, patient, positional play. They're playing teams that would be, you'd best attack them in transition,
right,
with extreme directness. Like, Austin is just,
you can't,
catastrophic in open yeah, space. And the Galaxy will just hand you the ball and be like, that's the lane. Run in that lane. Yeah. Go there.
You can't let a scrambled defense go to waste. And against Colorado this past weekend, Dallas did a good job of scrambling Colorado's defense a few times, and they always let it go to waste. They were always saying, no, pass it backwards. Everybody snap back into your positions. We can't possibly score unless it's a 16-pass buildup. You know, like, you have to, like, I understand the impetus behind that, but at some point you have to realize that if you can get in behind, that is the best play on the field to make. So make that play. I do trust San Jose a little bit more at home against Austin because they're at home, and also because in Jeremy Obobese, like, he's done it before. He's been in big moments before where he has risen to the occasion. Sometimes literally he's one of the best aerial strikers in the league. Like, he has risen to the occasion, and then they have match winners on the wing in Christian Espinoza and in the back in Daniel, who we're going to talk about here in a second as we get into our best 11.
We better get there then.
So who makes it? Don't do the whole thing. Just tell
us.
Don't do
the whole thing. Portland make it. San Jose make it. Dallas make it, because LA Galaxy backline is just so bad.
Fair.
San Jose in 7th, because I think they get the win. Portland. No, I'm sorry. Minnesota in 8th. I think they go to Kansas City and Reynoso plays an absolute blinder, and Minnesota gets the win on the road. So they leapfrog Portland in 8th. I think Portland get a draw against Houston and finish 9th. Yeah.
Okay. I have Portland, San Jose, and SKC in that order.
We've got everybody has different orders, yeah, basically. I like it.
I love
Somebody's going to be trying.
At the end of the day, look, it's set up for Dallas and San Jose with the two teams that they're playing. It's set up for them. It might not be the most fun that we want to see, but Dallas and San Jose, if they don't get it done against the teams that they're playing, as we've been saying, they clearly don't deserve it.
Yeah, it's on them. No doubt about it. All right, final three spots, seeding in the West. LAFC will get a home field advantage spot, 2nd through 4th. Seattle, Houston, Salt Lake, Vancouver basically can all shuffle from 2nd all the way. I don't think Vancouver can jump to 2nd, but I think they can go 3rd to 6th. But they can all get home field advantage. They can all not have home field advantage. Vancouver hosting LAFC, St. Louis hosting Seattle, Portland hosting Houston, which we've talked about, and then the game of the weekend, Colorado, RSL.
Rocky Mountain.
Which one has the most chaos in it? Which one has the most decision day energy?
Vancouver cannot lose anything. They can't drop any further. There is no value for them, in not losing or tying.
Oh, God. Vanni Sartini was...
Just let it open up and rip.
Go. Yes.
Let it go.
But the last time that happened, Vanni said it. They drew 0-0 with St. Louis. He was like, we're going for it. We're sending everything. And then it was a scoreless draw.
Okay.
Well, I wouldn't count on that happening again.
Same.
But, yeah.
So that's the one to me.
Okay.
I gotta agree. I think that's the
what are we chaotic. Looking at here? How about we just order these up, Doyle? We got best 11s to get to.
Order them up in what sense?
Yeah, how are they gonna finish?
Okay. I think. Ooh.
Just take us. How about this? You go through the results, and then we'll just figure it out as we go. So Vancouver, LAFC. What do you got?
I think Vancouver get the win at home.
50 points for Vancouver.
Working
LAFC on 51.
Class MVP.
We've got Vancouver jumping up the table. Right now, depending on goal differential,
they're in third.
They're in third.
Continue.
I said Houston gets a draw at Portland in the
previous segment. They're on 49. Continue.
I think Seattle go to St. Louis and get themselves a draw.
So now it's interesting.
Seattle are in third because it's a draw because wins is the tiebreaker. So LFC stay at second. Vancouver's now down in fourth.
And Houston's in
Salt Lake. Now the Rocky Mountain Cup decides all.
And because nothing ever makes sense, RSL goes on the road, beats Colorado for the fourth time this season, and does so without Ruiz or Chicho Arango. So a win for RSL.
So basically you have everything stays the same except Houston drops all the way to sixth and everyone else stays in the same order.
No, because I have Vancouver beating LAFC.
Yes. Yeah. So it's all on 50 points.
I could have bet you money when you proposed
for
this, by the way, that was going to be a train wreck.
I enjoyed it, though.
Yeah. It's going to be a mess.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what we want.
Yeah. It wouldn't shock me if I got every one of those predictions wrong. How the Western Conference
is. There any scenario that we didn't say that's probably going to be the most likely one to happen?
Yeah, Colorado wins.
Yes.
That's what I thought you were going to say.
Me too. Me too. I thought he was going to go with it.
Chalk.
All right. Well, we'll see how that all ends up. Coverage starts at 4:30 p.m. Eastern on MLS Season Pass on Apple TV, a 90-minute pregame show.
Oh, no, that's not.
Straight into.
I thought that was for.
Oh no, it's squad pick. Oh, we'll get to that.
That was something
Stefano.
Else.
Our
I
perfect
thought that was
squad pick
else.
Ruined by you. 6 o'clock Eastern Conference games, 9 p.m. Western Conference games, right after the wrap up, which you can watch on demand through the next week as we prepare for the wild card round in the middle of that next week. All right, squad pick, Dave. You know the deal.
Join our league. Go to MLSSquadPick.com to play, or you can click the link we tweet out. Join the official Extra Time League. Use code EXTRA, all capitals, E-X-T-R-A, to join. If you don't use the link, you can pick 5 players for your squad. If they all score in the same match day, you win. Even if you don't win, you are still entered to win the grand prize of $10,000. If you do win, you could win a free jersey and up to $160 in gift cards to MLS Store. What round is this from that you have the names in?
Oh, this was from the last time I was on this.
This was the last time we did this?
Uh-huh. Well, all together with Steph. And this was when we were one choice away. All this talk from Stephanie Fusaro about, FC Dallas, so uninspired. And you pick Jesus Ferreira?
This is why he doesn't trust
Jesus
him.
Ferreira?
Wait, who were they playing? I don't even remember.
Was it the home game against San Jose?
I don't even.
I think it might have been.
They played. It was Houston coming off Open Cup.
Right. I was saying it's going to be a hangover game for Houston.
0-0.
Yeah. David Goss, Bupinza, check. Doyle, Facu Torres, check. Weeby, Felipe Mora, check. Squad pick, Klaus, check. We just didn't. Just went away. Went away. All right. Who are your picks this time around, Dave? Make a pick.
For this weekend. Oof. I didn't realize this was a thing we were doing.
That was the buildup. That was the entire buildup.
I'm gonna pick Daniel Shallowy.
Interesting.
All right.
Yeah, gotta have goals. I think it's a good game to pick from, certainly.
Potential MVP. Yeah. Daniel Shallowy, homegrown.
Let's not talk too much about that. Doyle.
America runs on Duncan.
Nice.
Yes.
The man scored again. This week, this time for the USU 23s.
Playing Toronto? This is a good one.
Yeah,
off the bench?
Off the bench. Well, he started the first game.
Johan Gomez?
He scored 2 against Japan. He scored the first goal. Yep. Yeah.
What?
I think there was a deal with the teams that they weren't going to run these guys into the ground. Nobody played more than, I think, 120 minutes across the 2 games.
Makes sense. Steph, what do you got?
Cucho gets it done, and Columbus gets their CONCACAF Champions Cup spot.
Okay. I'm gonna go Lucho Costa, either from the spot or otherwise. I don't think that they'll play full 90 minutes with the best of the best for Cincinnati, but they will try to put on a show in their final regular season home game. So go Lucho. Who's the squad pick? Let's look for guarantees.
I'm gonna put Bulanga out there.
Yeah.
Vancouver has nothing to lose. Open game. He's going for the golden boot. He probably has it safely, but.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one. Okay. Bwanga on 19 goals, Lucho Costa on 16. It looks like Denny Bwanga will win that one. But that's not the most important golden boot race going down on the final week of the regular season in Major League Soccer. This time, we are relying only on producer Anders' math. He says he's taking it a little bit personal, the way that we've built up the guy in the mailbag who's done the math and has a pretty spreadsheet. So he says it has to be his math or nothing. So here we go.
Why would the math be different? They're goals. They're
not
assists.
It certainly should not be. In last place, holding on to their keeper as well as the potential number one overall pick in the 2024 time golden boot draft. It seems like we probably, I don't know, maybe we can change it.
Is it a snake draft? What's Anders' super strong feeling about the draft?
It's a snake draft.
Okay.
And that's fine.
Okay, I don't know.
Trust the process.
Okay.
Matt Doyle, 77 goals, 28 assists.
I was tanking all year long.
Just so you could get Michael Carter-Williams and Nerwin's Noel.
Oh, boy.
Led by Christian Benteke with 14 goals, Jeremy Obobese with 10 goals, nobody else even close to
double digits. And Duncan McGuire.
Oh, I didn't see that. It's hard when I have
Do you not get Sergio Cordova's Turkish League goals? Is it even the first division in Turkey?
Third place, Andrew Wiebe, 81 goals, 43 assists. The Greek god of goals, Georgios Giakoumakis, has really done me right this year. I had a lot of guys right around the 10 mark, and then some disappointments. Sam Surridge has not really done what I was hoping for, though he's starting to get in form, but 81 goals. Looks like I'll have the second pick.
I would love if anyone else did this out there, because we have gotten a couple messages, what the numbers their teams finish on. Like, I'm curious I'm curious if we did well at all.
Underperform, perform properly. Yeah. Not so sure about that. Okay. This is the big stuff right here. We don't have a representative of team.
I haven't seen it.
Kalen/Tom. So
Kalen scored for my
David Goss, 92 goals, 47 assists.
In third.
Rough one for you. Chicho Arango has gotten you 5 goals.
But he's hurt.
But he's hurt and probably won't be available for this final match day. And you will have...
It's fine. Swiderski is going to lead his team to the playoffs.
You will have to make up. Lewis Morgan could step in. You will have to make Derek Etienne, perhaps. That would be the best way for this day.
Yeah.
You will have to make up 3 goals on Team Tom Kalen, who have 95 goals. Wow. And Diego Rossi as their choice, who's rolling right along. And Shaqiri in front of a big crowd, etc.
It's tough. But it is always darkest before the dawn. Decision day. This is what we live for.
It's pretty incredible what Team Tom Kalen has done, with Sebas Ferreira getting 0-0.
I think Brenner
getting
might come around.
1 goal and 0 assists. Okay. Keep your eye on that on decision day. We'll make sure to keep you abreast of all extra time Golden Boot draft updates. Extra time best 11s is how we will end this show.
End. I feel like we're like 9 hours
away. I know. Doyle, you take the first team. We did all these together.
Yep.
There was disagreement at times, but we found a way to push forward with some semblance of a consensus. We have a coalition, you might say.
A quorum.
Yes.
I was actually very proud of us. There were very few items thrown around the green room as we were working through this. Goalkeeper, Roman Bürki. There was no debate about this one. Left back, Alvaro Barriel. I should point out, we went with the 4-4-2 diamond for this first team, first best 11. And as per Extra Time's way, we always play guys in positions that they played in at least a little bit during the regular season. And we choose a best 11 that is functional and representative of how teams played this year. And most best 11s don't have a number 8, sometimes not even a number 6, often not even fullbacks. We choose 2 fullbacks. We make sure there's a number 8. We make sure there's a number 6. So bear that in mind as we go through all of these. 4-4-2 diamond, Bürki in goal, left back Alvaro Barriel. We're playing with a back 4. Cincinnati played almost exclusively with a back 5 this year, but a wing back is functionally the same as a fullback in the modern game. Barriel's left back. DeJuan Jones is who we went with as our right back. He has played a lot of right back this year. He is primarily a left back, but we were willing to fudge it just because he is one of the 2 best fullbacks in the league right now. The center backs, Matt Miazga and Robin Jansen. We had this debate on Monday's show about one of these 2 guys should win MLS Defender of the Year. There was not a lot of debate over any other names this back line.
The question was really right back and whether we were willing to make the transition to get Jones in there. And in the end, there wasn't another right back that was just so head and shoulders above DeJuan that he made sense to push into that.
And the other thing, there was originally, we had thought maybe a 3-5-2, but given the strength of central midfield, specifically number 10s this year, it seemed playing a 4-4-2 diamond for this first team was the right choice. Obinion Dovoto was the defensive midfielder. I think there are arguments for other guys, but given how good he was for the best team in the league, I am fine with him being the number 6. And then it's Ace Ace and Thiago Almada as the shuttlers. And Almada often played deeper for Atlanta, especially earlier in the season, than Lucho Acosta did for Cincinnati. So Almada gets put in our shuttler position, and Lucho is at the point of the diamond as a 10. Those are the two, the first and second in the league in goal contributions, 29 for Lucho, 28 for Almada. They both had to be in the first team. That is, I think, the furthest bending of the any of our self-imposed rules that we went for. And then up top, it's Dennis Bouanga, who's going to win the Golden Boot, and Cucho Hernandez, who has 15 goals and 11 assists. You could argue both those guys are more wingers, but we're fine playing them up top in a two.
Second team, Dave.
We have Daniel in goal, who a lot of underlying numbers was actually better than Berkey, but didn't have enough minutes. So cleanly the second team goalkeeper for this one. This time we went with a back five to fit some of the center backs in. I think going to the point with Dwan Jones struggling a little bit for both fullback positions, and a lot of teams in MLS play as a back five. So we went with Ryan Hollingshead at right wing back, who has played on both sides, and he's done it very well over the course of the year. Steven Moreira at right center back, who has been phenomenal and consistent for Columbus in that role, is a special player going forward on the ball and is held up defensively. Jaimar in the middle and Jack Mayer as the left center back. Jaimar over Jackson Reagan, in Seattle being one of the best defenses in the league. I think Jaimar carries more responsibility in that back line. I think he carries more of the game, both in possession and out of possession, to make Jackson Reagan's life a little easier. So that's where I felt the push to bring Jaimar in here. And Jack Mayer, he will, if he starts this weekend, I think start 32 games for the best defense in MLS. Walker Zimmerman, not as available this year. Lucas McNaughton has played in that spot, a few other people as well. And it's all held up thanks to Jack Mayer elevating his game to being a consistent center back. He wins his 50-50 battles. He organizes similar to what we've seen Walker Zimmerman do in the past. Odd, because he missed all of Leagues Cup, which was the brightest moment of the season for Nashville, but that's not what we're basing this on. So his MLS league play, he has been the best center back for that team. And then we had Kai Wagner at left wing back, which I, in digging through some of the numbers, don't know that I totally agree with, but he is elite as a chance creator from the back line. He is, I think, third for defenders for assists. He plays for one of the best teams in the league. Midfield three of João Paulo, Coco, and Carlos Heal. A lot of numbers still say Heal's the best chance creator in the league. Coco has been a linchpin to the Houston midfield and has done a little bit of everything. And João Paulo has returned from injury to his elite level. And then the two attackers in the 3-5-2 are two who will be familiar with each other. Brian White and your working class MVP. I don't know the letters on my hand.
What are you doing with your hands? Brian, what are you doing with your hands?
I'm not really one who normally gets an MVP combo.
I don't know what to do with my hands.
Exactly. Yeah. I feel like I'm in a spaceship.
And then you could...
But you could do sure. MVP.
We're getting there.
They are a top five attack. And I think part of the thing with Vancouver is Vanny only really put these two together in this spot, 10, 12 games into the season?
Yeah.
So if they had been the full year, I think they would be one of the two or three best attacks. Their numbers individually are already in some of the best in MLS for Gold, both on and off the ball, for White as a goal scorer and as a chance creator for his team. And Vancouver is potentially going to finish as third in the West. So both of them get in there as forwards.
I like it. That's our second team. Of course, two more teams to go. Third team, Steph.
Third team. It's third team, and we have our third different formation, which I love. 4-3-3 for this one. Goalkeeper Stephen Fry of Seattle. They were, you know, all around one of the best defenses in the league, and he was great in goal, as we've seen now for years from him. The back four, Julian Gressel as right back. He's played at a lot of different positions, center mid, right wing back, right back. We know that he plays on that right side, so right back feels good for him, doing a great job for Vancouver and then doing the same thing when he was traded to Columbus. The center backs, Jackson Reagan from Seattle, so now we have one on the second team in Jaimar, and Jackson Reagan on the third team. As we mentioned, that great defense from Seattle. Nkosi Tafari is the other center back from FC Dallas, and a left back, John Tolkien, my guy, J-Mai, happy for him. Another great season for the Red Bulls. In the midfield, it's interesting, right? This defensive mid position was so hard to do. Where for the last how many years, it's been a lock, and Jose Martinez has been the guy on the first team. You could have made a case for any of like our guys from the defensive mid and any of our four teams to be the one to be in the first team, really.
I tried to put Kubas in the second team.
And that's where we have Andres Kubas in the third team.
The working man's defensive mid.
He's going to dig into this. I also just love that, of course, it's Goss who's got the two guys in the with the hat.
Go Vancouver, baby.
I love it. Edward Leuven in the midfield for this third team. Incredible season for him for St. Louis. And Hani Mukhtar, even though he had a rough second half of the year, he still had, was it 15 goals?
15 and 12.
And 12 assists. Yeah. And that's by having a really not good second half of the season by his standards. And the front three, we'll start with the wingers, Christian Espinosa, who had an incredible first half of the season, dropped off a little bit, but was still key for them as far as San Jose is concerned. Facundo Torres, who's really picked it up for Orlando City in the second half of the season and has pushed them to where they are now. And at forward, Yordios Yakomakis, had he been healthy, might have been competing for first team forward.
I don't think there's any might have. I think he's probably on that first team.
Probably wins the Golden Boot.
Yeah, you're right.
Probably. Yeah. All right.
Well, if Joe Klaus was healthy, he would have won the Golden Boot and he would have been on this team.
If Tame Ibuki was here the whole season.
Should we open that? Because
we did. Yeah, the thank you, the box from the San Jose Earthquakes. We do appreciate you, San Jose.
Did you take the tape off already?
Cracked the
okay.
Make it easy. Yeah.
I know, a lot of minutes trying to do this.
Yeah, after I dropped it. Okay, so we have a T-shirt off the top. Vote for
Christian. That's cool.
Yes. Vote for Christian, says the T-shirt here
for this best
is,
11.
Yeah, vote for Pedro. This is a
we got a lot of them.
Oh, we got we might have an entire box. Of
we might have a box of vote for Christian.
We have an entire box of vote for Christian. Somebody get the T-shirt cannon.
Wow, that's a lot of them.
Yeah, there's a lot of who does it? Who wants one?
Yeah, pass that over.
Yeah, who wants a vote for Christian? He has been.
Your team.
This looks like a Doyle. This looks like a Doyle wear.
So, vote for Christian for MVP. Scored or assisted on 65% of the Earthquakes' goals. Only one of two players with 12 goals and 12 assists. Number one in key passes. Number two in expected assists. That so says the.
I'm not going to vote for him for MVP, but I'll vote for him for 13 best 11.
Nice. There it is. Got him in there. Now, look, one of the issues with these best 11s was that we didn't feel we had a ton of wingers to push. That's why we were going with 3-5-2s and diamonds in the midfield. But Espinosa and Facundo Torres, I think, are very clearly the top two pure wingers in the league. If you're counting Bawanga or Cucho, maybe you could get them in there. But I count them a little bit more as almost strikers.
I think Bawanga plays as a winger on the team. If we're saying Espinosa is, Bawanga is too.
Okay, fine.
I'm just saying.
Domino. Yeah.
Oh, did he say that?
No. I just thought the way you said that was... you shut me down quick. I didn't really have a response.
I'm glad you did it because I didn't want to play the heavy right there. But Weedy was wrong.
Yeah. No, I didn't have a response to that. I was like, okay, I'm going to take that medicine.
Although you are dressed to play the heavy in that.
Yeah, you are kind of dressed to play the...
You got the Undertaker look going.
All right, the fourth team.
Wearing... black. Everybody at this table is wearing
I never wear black.
I'm legitimately full in black.
It's a good luck.
Andre Blake is our goalkeeper for the fourth team. This was a bit of a debate. We didn't have a clear... I mean, it could have been Brad Stuver.
Brad Stuver is... like, nobody outside of Austin understands how good Brad Stuver has been for four straight years. Could have argued for him.
Yeah, so we could go Andre Stuver, Brad Blake, whatever. Right back, Brooks Lennon. I wanted this one for many other best 11s, was not allowed until we hit the fourth team, but Brooks, 4 goals, 10 assists, not exactly a defensive, he's not the Undertaker, let's say, for opposing attacks, but he's very good going forward from that outside back position. Sean Nealis, Jakub Glesnes are the center backs, left back, Daniel Lovitz. In the midfield, this hurt us to have Artur all the way down in the fourth team, but he's in our fourth. Also, Aiden Morris, Cesar Araujo in the diamond here, and then Daniel Gazdag is your attacking midfielder. Then up top, two forwards, Alan Pulido and Christian Benteke. What are you shaking your head about?
Pretty much the whole thing. I'm ready to pick apart all these teams.
I thought we did this in the meeting.
Nah, you guys ignored me.
Okay. All right. Well, who's your snub then? What's your snub?
Well, so for starters, I think Julian Gressel is one of the best players in MLS. I think he's phenomenal. But he played more than half the year with Vancouver and the entire time as a center mid. So don't know that he gets to be a right back based
off. It's the third team, Dave.
Oh, I'm not allowed to be upset about the third team.
No, you can
be
upset about it.
We just spent the time to build the team.
Who's a better right back?
John Gallagher, I thought, had a better year than Brooks Lennon. But both of them were our attacking options as fullbacks. I think João Klaus, even with the injuries, deserves
1,200 minutes.
João Klaus?
He played for the best
expansion team of all time.
Yeah, but the expansion,
where he was the leader.
Was he more
effective?
How
many games did they win to start the year?
Was he more effective on a per minute basis than Nico Joachini?
I don't know.
I think he probably was. I just
Teemu Pukki had 10 in 950.
Stop. That's when it didn't matter, when João Klaus played right off the bat, led this team so that they could have a lead on the points the whole season.
He kind of played more than 1,200 minutes to be best 11.
Maybe. The other one I had was, I thought Jose Martinez over Cesar Araujo in this fourth team.
Okay.
It's a fair shout.
Okay. Any snubs from you, Doyle?
Ricky Pooj. I know we tend to avoid guys from losing teams, and the Galaxy are nothing if not a losing team this year, but he is just the absolute best in the league at progressing the ball upfield. He puts his attackers into such great spots. He doesn't bring much defensively, but in terms of making an attack go, I'm not sure there's a better player in the league, and to not have him on any of the first four teams feels a little rough to me. Like, the most important thing in our game is putting the ball in the back of the net. The second most important thing is getting the ball to the spots where people can put the ball in the back of the net. I mean, there are some data folks who would argue that I have them reversed. Like, getting the ball into those spots in the first place is actually the most important thing. And like, Ricky just does that at a higher level more consistently than anybody else in MLS.
Steph, you got a snub?
Leo Messi.
I want everybody to know that Weeby is creating a list right now
as we speak
in the document.
I just wanted to have Messi on a list that was snub, because that'd be the first time he'd be on any type of list of snubs. Look, we had to pick.
Klaus only played 1,200 minutes. How many minutes did Messi play?
don't get me started with my Reynoso take. If you're going to take Klaus, yeah. No. Look, we had to pick one. Jesus Ferreira was without. Without Jesus Ferreira, FC Dallas is down at the bottom.
Down bad.
Down bad, yeah, exactly. Bad. So, yeah, Jesus Ferreira was, you know, a snub. I guess he had, I think it was 12 goals on the season.
You could argue right over Benteke for sure on that fourth
team. I do think so, yeah. I mean, Benteke was very good for, it's almost like Ferreira and Benteke were their whole teams. Without either of those two players, those teams would it be at the bottom? Oh, DC's already kind of there. But anyway, yeah, that's where I'm picking. I'm going with Ferreira.
Here's my list: Karol Swiderski, Julian Carranza, Evander, but most of all, Mathieu Chouinard.
Justice for Mathieu.
Yeah. No MLS All-Star.
He's going to get his justice in a hat trick in Columbus on decision day.
Quick Mathieu Chouinard story. Calling a game in Montreal this season, and we're just me and my analysts were discussing, you know, the absence of Chouinard in that game. He wasn't playing. And how much are they missing Chouinard in that midfield? And if you have ever been in that stadium, the players that are injured actually, and I didn't know this, sit right in front of the booth. And we start talking about it, and Chouinard just goes,
yes. He's always locked in.
He was listening to everything we were saying.
It's a field awareness for Matthew. Yeah. He knows what's going on around him.
He's a good
him.
Player.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right, that's it for us. Decision day. Going down on Saturday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern is your 90-minute pregame show on MLS.
Did you not make a case for Jackson Reagan at any point on any of the four teams?
He's there. Third team. I said it. Yeah, third team.
Steph did the third team. I was like, I thought you did the third team.
I got to tell you, David's been off all day. We did the match previews this morning.
Well, he showed up yesterday.
I did show up yesterday, and then I had to go watch.
I can't believe that.
On the wrong day. Lose in game four.
Is that it? Is it the Liberty got you shook?
Yeah. They handed it away. Wow. I had to watch the Aces celebrate for a second.
Do you guys all have Maria in your ears?
I don't know, but
she's saying that David's been off the entire week. He hasn't even come back from Portugal. That's what this is right now.
No one's in my ears.
And I came back sharper. Maybe. Possibly. I just feel happy for Dave to at least be able to see a finals at his building. All right, that's it for us. 4:30 p.m. Eastern pregame show. 6 o'clock is the Eastern Conference. 9 p.m. Eastern is the Western Conference. And wrap up afterwards, all on MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. Adios. Enjoy Decision Day.